Hello, welcome to the Lately in JavaScript podcast hangout. This is episode 43, I think. As always, I have here with me Artur Sozins. Hello, Artur, how are you doing?
Hello, greetings to all from Latvia. Great to be here.
Yeah, well, I guess now it's already evening over there, because this time we're not able to record this sooner, just the other month.
Yeah, it's basically almost tonight, but it's okay.
Well, anyway, we are here to talk about what has been happening lately in the JavaScript world, and we have quite a bunch of interesting topics to talk about. I'm going to start with a topic that, despite here, it's telling that it is related with the Angular framework. I think this is, could be used even for packages that are not about the Angular framework. And there is an article here that explains how how it could be the PhantomJS library could be used to retrieve versions of pages that otherwise would be served by applications via AJAX. So the idea is to supply a static version of a page that could be indexed by the search engines. And this relies on the convention that I'm not sure if it is just Google, but search engines in general should support, which is the hashband convention. So if you have a URL that has exclamation mark, the hash character and the exclamation mark followed by a URL, it converts to another URL, so-called ugly URL, which has an escape fragment parameter, and the URL takes as parameters some values that will be used by the server to render the page on the server and serve it as it would appear for users browsing the site regularly. JavaScript enabled pages, so AJAX content would be eventually served. And the idea is that this way it could be could allow the content to be indexed properly by search engines. Well, this is more for those kinds of sites that do not have are not really applications, are more content sites that have different pages, but they are loaded dynamically using AJAX, because regular applications probably doesn't much sense. I mean, a regular AJAX-based applications, because they do not use suggested here, the hashband convention. But I think the idea is interesting, and PhantomJS can be used for these purposes, helping indexing, I mean, generating static versions of the pages, which otherwise would be more complicated for your application on the server to render them. So PhantomJS is an headless browser that will crawl the pages and render them, and to serve the final JavaScript for those AJAX-based pages. So I think this is interesting. I don't know, Artur, if you have been using any sites with AJAX that otherwise you'd like to have the content on the pages be indexed by search engines.
Yeah, actually I have. I had a client, I think a year ago, maybe even more, where something like that was needed. And basically, what I did was creating PHP modules, one that outputs simple JavaScript and fetches content through the API, and others that PHP would generate HTML basically based on a template and output it. So that's like creating two different versions of website, which could be shown based on it's needed based on the URL you showed, the escape fragment. And well, it was almost twice the work. So if you can really put in a headless browser to render it for all and then output the HTML, that really saves you a lot of time.
Yes, that's precisely the point. I'm not sure if this is, there is a special integration with AngularJS, because the article here tells about AngularJS and integrating it with PhantomJS. But from what I got, I suppose that it can be adapted to other technologies that you may be using on the server, not necessarily Node.js with PhantomJS, could be something else. And also related with this topic, the next topic is precisely about something also related to search engines, specifically with Google, that is announcing they are working on understanding web pages better, because nowadays many sites have content served via AJAX, and for search engines to crawl it properly, they need to somehow interpret the JavaScript that is on the pages to follow the eventual links that the users will click or forms, and somehow figure what is the content that the users will see, because they will not follow regular links that Googlebot would crawl, at least in the past. So they say that now they are able to crawl web pages better with the JavaScript. And well, for now this is an announcement, because they are also say that in the coming days you webmasters will be able to see in the webmasters tool site what Google is crawling, what Google is seeing, so you can see a preview of what Google is crawling even when you have AJAX based web pages. And this is interesting because it comes exactly at the moment when I am implementing a new web page design for package pages that will have tabs, and part of the content will not appear initially. And if the user will click on tabs, and the tabs will switch to another content that becomes visible. And if Google is not able to crawl those pages properly in interpreting the JavaScript, it will not see what the user is seeing. And we probably missed some important content that could be indexed. And well, for now, this is just being announced. We don't know if what part of this is working, but I think it will be interesting to see if Google is able to actually crawl the whole content, not just what is loaded on the first access. And also related to this, previously I mentioned the Ashbank convention, but later Google also said that if you use HTML5 push state calls, it will be also be able to crawl the URLs of the pages that will be there and pushed to the browser history. And this is important, because if you want to have your web pages served with JavaScript be indexed properly, you need to at least use HTML5 push state calls. And this is the important thing to remember if you are working on a site. Arthur, have you been using HTML push state?
Yeah, I actually haven't heard that news, and it's quite interesting because I thought it was working most on the client side. So how would they actually know? How would their server be notified?
The idea is that they interpret the JavaScript basis, and when they follow, when they find push state calls, they interpret it as a new URL to be indexed. So eventually that URL will show different content and it will act as a different page on the browser. So for instance, if you have a page that has several tabs, the tabs show different content using the switching parts of the pages. If you use HTML push state, for instance, for each tab, it will be viewed by the Google as different pages, and they will index it properly. Well, that's the expectation. We don't know yet if that will work well, but we'll see. And for now, we just move on to another topic, which this time is related to Sweden. This page loads. This is an article. I think it is interesting because it somehow reminds people that just because we've been using jQuery, you don't have to use jQuery all the time. Nowadays, it's not even needed for some purposes. And basically, it talks about the DOM APIs that are available to traverse the documents. And in this article, it shows how we would do it using jQuery, with all the conventions that people are used to. And below, this is a long article that tries to show many types of operations to traverse DOM articles. And in the end, it talks about that basically you don't need to do most of that with jQuery, because there are calls like query selector that let you select nodes that matches some selector expression. Arthur, have you been using any of these calls in your on your applications, or do you still rely on jQuery like many other people?
It depends. Actually, when I create something for a client, I usually use jQuery. But if I create my own packages that I publish to JS classes, I try to do everything on the basic JavaScript API, so making it more independable and probably even faster. But in the beginning, you mentioned a great point. I remember that we have had an intern that could not really separate jQuery from JavaScript. He was like thinking it is the same thing. So what's the difference? JavaScript, jQuery, it's like the same. So I think that many web developers are using jQuery and probably are not even aware that it is an abstraction, a framework, and that basically everything that can be done underneath. And this article shows perfectly that almost every jQuery selector can be matched with a same one-liner with underneath API, but
yeah. Well, that's the problem. In the latest years, jQuery became the default for many people. So
yeah.
they are so much used to jQuery that they actually don't know that it's mapped to some calls of the DOM that are already available, and probably it's just a mapping one-on-one internally. I did not pick on jQuery source, but I suppose that nowadays with most browsers are supporting these APIs to query documents using these selectors, and sometimes it won't even make sense to use jQuery, but they are still using it.
This article actually also demonstrates the HTML.js. I wasn't aware of it, but looking from it, it actually reminded me how you can traverse XML files using XPath. So it's kind of completely other approach, but in some cases it could be also more usable than jQuery. So that is also an interesting part of this article, if someone is interested in it.
Yeah, that's true. Well, now moving on to another topic, this time about tool that, a browser extension for Chrome. It's called Facebook Flow. Of course, it's by Facebook. And it is different than what are used to, because it seems very advanced. I just read about it. I did not try it in practice. So I hope I'm not describing it inaccurately, which is an extension that you can install in Chrome, and it lets you update, modify code, and have it updated right away in the browser. That's what I got. Did you also get that, or what was your interpretation of this?
Yeah, basically, as I understood, there is a process like a server running who is constantly checking the files, and if you change them probably in other EDA or maybe a specific line, then it automatically detects the change and loads a new file, basically real-time outputting the changes. So it's probably even more than a real-time development tool. It's like also a deployment tool, so it must be much more complex than that. It's just the overall vision that I have of what was described.
So the idea here seems to be to avoid that you need to reload your whole application tool. The whole page to load the new versions of scripts, but I wonder, is this really necessary, or is this just a special need that Facebook figured in their own development?
Well, it's hard to say. If you look at the Facebook page, there are lots of real-time events like notifications, chat messages that happen without even reloading the page. So maybe lots of users are used to it and not even ever closing the page and always let it run. So situation, that is a great way to update that page.
Well, maybe they are thinking about users that never close the browser to reload the page and figure that there are newer versions of JavaScript. This is probably really something that is very related to the way Facebook updates their own pay these applications. They probably are having frequent updates, and they need the users to reload the pages, and they are not reloading them. Okay, it's interesting, but I don't know if it is useful for
the majority. Just a speculation, so.
Right. Well, it's either that or we don't have a clue. I did not get anything right. Okay, now moving on to another topic. Let me share the screen here. And this one is an article that is telling about some findings about the way people load scripts in their web pages. Well, originally you only have this way of using the script tag to load some JavaScript code. And then with the concern that the page should load faster, there were some techniques that were started being used to actually defer the load of those scripts towards the end of the page loads, so they so the actual page content loads first before those scripts. So it shows here the regular alternative of creating a script element and appending it to the head dynamically, and it will load the script with this URL here. And then it starts commenting that since the he has analyzed the loading graphs that browsers, for instance, like Chrome, can show to you, that there is that is not really asynchronous, because there is some blocking period. And,
yeah, well, basically, because you know, when JavaScript was detected, they assume it may change some CSS page properties, the visual stuff. So they need to load the old CSS styles first, interpret them, and only then allow to loading the JavaScript.
Right. So what he figured that to really make it JavaScript, it is better to use the async attribute in the script tag, because that really tells the browser that is to be loaded synchronously, and you and well, this is nowadays this is the official way to do it, the recommended way to do it. So if you thought that using that approach of writing adding script tags dynamically to your document was really asynchronous, so the message from this article is that it is not really asynchronous in the or the page load of your the loading process of your pages will be delayed a bit, and so he recommends to use the async attribute. I just wonder if this is generally supported by all browsers. I think nowadays it should, but I'm not really looking up all the browsers, what they support, what they don't support. What do you think, Arthur? So what is your experience? Do you been looking at different browsers?
About the browser support issue, I always think of it that way, that if I can optimize it to provide a better experience, faster, better performance to the user with newer browsers, then I could actually sacrifice the users with the old browser. But clients not always see it that way. So
Well, the question is, which are the users of the using old browsers? Which versions?
Oh, it's really, you need to test it always. You can't tell. Right. But actually,
that's the problem, I don't know if even there is a resource that tells, all the browsers support the async property, which from this version. It would be interesting to know, because probably that's an attribute that's been supported for many versions, although it is not even concerned.
Yeah, mostly in these cases you need to look probably not in browser, but in the renderer, HTML renderer version, like you have a trident, I think, in the Internet Explorer or WebKit in Chromium, and see what they can do, and then you can know which browsers have those versions and blah blah blah. But actually, what I wanted to tell, that I looked at Google Analytics code, because it still injects the script, and I was wondering why. And basically because they need to set up some variables before the script is loaded and use them. But when injecting scripts, they are setting the async attribute on. So basically the injected script loads asynchronously. So that is kind of combination of what was told in the article, that also greater alternative to use if you need something to be done before loading the script.
Yeah, you can always have some JavaScript code just to set some variables and then have a separate tag to actually load the script that you want to load asynchronously. You don't have to use it all in a single tag. Although you could if you use that approach of of the appending the script dynamically. Okay, but now moving on to another topic. Oh wait, it's not the one. Okay. Now you're looking at my shell. Not very interesting. Okay. Right. Google and got shifted the windows here. Okay. Now moving to another topic, which is about a new API. Yeah, I'm not sure if this is the right name to call it, or is it some API that was expanded, or I'm still in doubt. Probably this is a new API, but okay. Basically, it is what they call web animations, and by which they allow you to animate some page element by defining some CSS properties that will change their values. That is what I got, because I have not tried this to make sure. Arthur, did you try this to see what it does?
Not really, but I can comment on stuff. Basically, yeah, if you scroll a little more lower, then you see that the first code block shows how it's done in the, now again, a little up, more up. Then it shows how it's done in CSS, because in CSS 3 the animation was, as you see, you can assign to styles, and the animation was already available for some time, but there was no really a way to do that handily in JavaScript except from setting the style properties. But now in the newer Chrome version, basically there is an API for that you can animate and provide time frames more easily, and it returns the playable object that you can play, replay, stop. So I think it basically substitutes the need for jQuery animating and uses it on purely on browser level through CSS. Same thing that does CSS animation do. So
You mentioned jQuery, but I think there are several libraries that already did this. I got this right, this is just to let you define some properties that will be changed. I'm trying to remember, but I think there were some packages that
most probably you also had one, because you have lots of animations on the JS classes and PHP classes site.
Yeah, and the idea here is that if you rely on the browser version, you no longer have to use any libraries, but at the same time, this requires a newer browser version.
Yeah, well, as all new features.
Yeah, and the idea here is, I'm not sure if this is a good idea at all, because why are you going to rely on a newer browser version that not everybody is using it?
Yes, but if it will become the part of the standard?
Yeah, but only it will take time until all browsers support it, because now it says Chrome 36 is supporting it now. I'm not even using Chrome 36.
So, as I said, it happens with all new additions that basically they take time to propagate to all browsers and all browsers support it. But it doesn't mean that are bad.
Well, I don't know, but I have my mobile phone for 4 years now, and I don't know, and I upgraded it. If everybody just rely on versions of newer browsers, probably nothing will be supporting in the browser that I have in my mobile phone. Because and the desktop, it is easier to update. Many users are updating it automatically, but mobile phones, it's not something that happens frequently. Anyway,
so the bottom line would be, you can use new features, but always fallback.
Right. That's what we have to do, and we have to implement lots of clauses to deal with conditional code that could be executed or not. Well, anyway, now we are moving on towards the end of this podcast, and we are going to talk now about one regular section on which we comment about the Innovation Award winners. And this time we're going to talk about the winners, the nominees of March. They were voting on April, and then in May the results come out. So now we can talk about them. There are like there were four nominees. Artus, which ones would you like to comment?
Okay, let me start by sharing the screen.
It helps.
Yep, there it is. So the first one I would like to comment about is a great idea, a class of Franz Josef Brunner from Austria. And what he provided a way how to encode a hidden message into images. I can probably show a code. Yeah, here it is, how it's done. Basically, you create an image. Sorry, you create an image, and you can you set the image. You get encode different messages in it. The thing is called stenography, and what it does basically creates encodes or crypts the messages in everyday objects. As you know, they say if you want to hide something, put it in the most visible place. And at first I thought that this package just simply encodes the message in the metadata or something like that, but no, it actually encodes it in a pixel value, so it also alter image. You need to experiment with different modes of alteration to see what best suits you, and that makes this quest even more awesome. That's why I really liked it.
Yeah,
so,
right.
Thank you.
Well, I think probably it would be hard, if possible, to, at all, to put hide data in metadata. Well, in this case, it is just changing the pixels in a canvas image to have it exported probably in PNG format, if I got it right.
Yeah.
I don't know if there is any control over the content that goes in PNG data that is saved by the browsers from canvas.
Most probably it is. I think they all could be encoded and decoded into RGB alpha values, so basically channels. So
alpha channels is still part of the picture, not the metadata. Okay, and what would be the other one that you would like to call?
And the other one is created by Michele Brigigallo, I hope I read it correctly, from Italy, and he created a slider. Well, slider is mostly nothing new, simple slider, but what its innovative component is that the whole slider is defined through XML file definition. Basically, you can create single XML file that defines the images, positions or transition durations and stuff like that, and titles. So the package itself generates everything from the XML file that you can easily configure and change. And yeah, that's why it makes it so innovative and great.
Yeah, that's interesting because it allows you to separate your web pages code, JavaScript code, from the definition of those animations. So eventually could dynamically load different animations from different URLs that define that XML of the animation metadata. And on my part, I also like to comment on a couple of classes. Let me share the screen here. Well, the first one that I would like to comment is about this one, which is called JavaScript time functions. And it is interesting because this allows you to implement a sort of, could be animations, could be anything, and anything that has to execute at specific intervals of time, you can use this object to execute some code after some time, and it allows you to define the code, define the times and the callback functions that will be called here. And as you may see in this example, it is very simple, and you can add functions, callback code that will be used it will be called after some time delay, and here you define the delay. So it's pretty simple. As I said, it could be used for animations, but it could also be used for any other purpose that is not exactly something about animations. And this this package here is was developed by Jimmy Bo. Actually, this is an alias. I know his real name. This is a secret alias. Wants to preserve his privacy. And Jimmy Bo, just the way he calls himself on the site. And he is from Canada. And also talk about him. There is another package that was also nominated that he has written. And this one is it's also interesting. It's somehow similar. It is to calculate coordinates of points in lines, curve shapes of any form. But instead of drawing those shapes, it just returns the coordinates. And this can be interesting to many purposes on which you need to somehow render something, but it's not exactly to draw. For instance, if you are if you have a game on which you like to show some graphics that are being animated according to some logic, some shape, you can use this library to calculate the different positions of the points, and have a separate code to render something at the position of those points. And this is quite interesting and somewhat unusual. So kudos to Jimmy Bo again for his contribution, because it is really great to have more innovative packages like this. And talking about innovative packages, I also like to comment again, because starting this year we have the Innovation Award championship by country. So let's take a look at the way the rankings are up till now. So by individual users, so far Jimmy Bo is leading. He has submitted already 3 packages and earned 7 points, and he is followed by several others that only submitted 1 package so far. So this is still very early in the year, and nothing is defined, but so far Jimmy Bo is ahead in the ranking. And thanks to his contributions, so far Canada is leading the ranking, again with his own 3 packages and 7 points so far. But this time it is followed by Italy with 2 packages and 6 points. That thanks to other authors from Italy, like here we can see who they are, Alessandro Bernas and Michele Frigigallo. I'm not sure if this is the right way to spell their names. I hope I'm not pronouncing them incorrectly. And as I said, we are still very early in the year, and I mean, so far we have been commenting up to winners of March. So there's still plenty of time until the end of the year for this championship to evolve. And Arthur, have you been following up with these rankings? Anything worth noticing other than there is nobody from Latvia participating so far?
Well, I'm actually quite impressed that Jimmy Bow pulled the candidate to the first place all by himself. So yeah, that's a great respect. And if he continues that, he would be unstoppable.
Yeah, so let's see if he keeps following this trend. At least in my country, Italy is also going strong, and it's probably easier for so far two winners, two nominees have been contributing for bringing up Italy in the for if there are only. There is only one from Canada and against two from Italy. Probably it would be easier for Italy to surpass Canada. But okay, as I said, it's very early in the year. Let's see how this evolves. Well, basically, we have practically reached to the end of this podcast. This month there are not so many topics to talk about, but next month, I have something to announce. Actually, probably, if you have noticed, there is already a new design being implemented. You can see it already how it looks here. I'm not going to comment much about it. Let's say that it's still a work in progress. But by the time we record the next Hangout, it certainly will be already released. And it's much more usable than before, so I'm very excited to work on it, to release it soon, because the user experience will be much better for all users. Well, as I said, we reached the end of the podcast, and that's all we have to say for this month. So on my behalf, that is all for now. Bye.
Bye-bye.